Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last year, one in three Americans, were told, picked up the phone and ordered a product pitched on TV. The promises are enticing, one-size-fits-all solutions to problems you didn't know you had. Mighty Putty will fix all your home repairs. The ShamWow will absorb a pan of water. And the Ronco Pasta Maker can make hundreds of varieties of pasta and save you money. It's a $100 billion industry, bigger than Hollywood and the music business, and driven by the big personalities and psychological insights of the pitchmen. This hour, On Point, how the mega infomercial empire sells Americans everything from the pet egg to spray-on hair. Pitchman Billy Mays died on June 28th. His pitches were said to have generated about $1 billion of sales in his lifetime, and they go on. His style was fast, loud, to the point, with money-saving promises viewers found hard to resist.
It happens. You rip, tear, and never have time to repair. Wait! Before you throw it away, let Mighty Mend It save the day. Hi, Billy Mays here for Mighty Mend It, the fast, easy way to mend, hem, and wear it again. Saving you money.
Oh boy, and it sells. Now you can join the conversation this hour. Which pitch has seduced you? Why? Did you think the greater plater or the nicer dicer would make your life easier? Do you watch these in fascination, in horror? Operators are standing by now to take your call. Joining me from New York is Remy Stern. He tells all in a great new book, But Wait, There's More. Tighten your abs, make billions, and learn how the $100 billion infomercial industry sold us everything but the kitchen sink. The Dallas Morning News calls it an intelligently composed expose, an impressive work of contemporary history. Remy Stern, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
$100 billion a year. Is that worldwide, North America, USA? Is it confirmed for real?
That's just in the United States. So that doesn't even include the business in other countries, which is actually growing as we export our infomercials abroad, as a matter of fact.
You know, I go all the way back to many years ago, State Fair, and you'd see these guys with their what at that time was kind of cool, you know, the mic that was wired up to their mouth, and they'd have some kind of knife and a pile of vegetables cutting and cutting and talking and talking, and they would attract a heck of a crowd. But who would have thought, I don't know, then, that today this would be such an enormous industry consuming so much of our television spectrum? I mean, all hours of the day you can find infomercials all over. Why?
We, I think, love to buy things. We love to be sold to. These are very entertaining demonstrations. The same demonstrations that attracted a crowd on the boardwalk in Atlantic City are the demonstrations that attract us as television viewers. You know, it's wacky, it's crazy, it's outrageous, and that's the sort of thing that is perfect for sleepy viewers at 2 o'clock in the morning who are looking for something to watch.
Give us a sense of the scale and growth of this business. Racket business? I don't know what you call it, but on American television, on global media.
Well, it's a fairly new business in the sense that there weren't infomercials, at least the longer form infomercials, which are half an hour in length. There are also the shorter ones, which are 60 seconds or 90 seconds, and they're generally described as short form and long form. The longer infomercial only came into existence in 1984 during the period of cable deregulation under President Reagan. So it's really only been 25 years. They had existed, though, in the 50s. They were called product demonstrations, if people remember back to the 50s when they would see these cooking shows that were actually paid for by advertisers and featured a roto-broil oven, for example. Then they disappeared for most of the 60s and 70s and then came back in the 80s. And since they debuted in the mid-80s, it's become just a massive business, and nobody really predicted it. But here we are. And one in three Americans every year purchases a product that's advertised on an infomercial, amazingly.
You call it a stepchild of the entertainment industry. Why that?
What I found interesting was that a lot of the people who worked in infomercials actually had once had dreams of making it in the sort of mainstream entertainment industry. In that way, it reminded me of the adult entertainment business.
I.e. porn.
Porn.
Catching those who just fail at the other.
If you couldn't be a sort of a famous Hollywood cinematographer, you could use those same talents and make a porn movie or an infomercial. And to a certain extent, they take place in the same area. The outskirts of L.A. is a stronghold for both the porn industry and the infomercial industry.
I want to listen to one of these pitches and have you do a little psychological dissection for us about what's going on when the pitchmen roll out their pitches that work so amazingly well. This is Anthony Sullivan. He's Billy May's former business partner, another big name in infomercials, and here he's pitching the aforementioned Grater Plater. It's a plate with a rough surface. It'll grate anything, we're told, from cheese to onions. At the end of his spiel, he looks to sweeten the deal. Let's listen, and Remy, tell us what's going on here. Here's Anthony Sullivan.
Call today and get the Grater Plater for just $10, but I'm just getting started. With every order, we'll also include the roll and peel. Take a clove and give it a roll. Peel all the garlic you like without ever touching it. You'll even get the gathering brush to mix all your flavors together and top your favorite foods. But spend $10 with me today, and I'll spend $10 right back with you. Call right now, and we'll double this entire offer absolutely free. Just pay separate processing and handling. You get it all. A huge value. All for just $10.
Anthony Sullivan, Grater Plater, roll and peel. Call right now. Double the entire offer. You get it all. Unpack this a little bit for us, Remy Stern.
Well, the first interesting thing is that he's British.
Yes.
Sully is what everybody calls him.
Okay.
There's a great tradition of British pitchmen, and it's actually no accident. There's a very good reason for it. The reason is that Americans find English accents more authoritative, researchers have found, and infomercial producers have found it not via research but anecdotally. And
of course, there's a great tradition you can see on the streets of London even today of kind of pitching all kinds of bizarre acts and theater and sword swallowing and you name it.
Right.
Bring it right
on
over.
And they basically just sort of took those people and brought them over to the U.S., mm-hmm. where an English accent sounds—you sound more, you know what you're talking about.
That Grater Plater must be great in that accent.
Right. It's funny because in the very early days in the late 80s, they would always put them in these funny outfits with suspenders and bow ties. I don't know if you remember seeing
no,
that,
I
which
don't.
Added to the sort of authoritative effect that was going on. They were, you know, making them all look like British professors, speaking
right,
intelligently
right.
about cookware.
Right.
So that's sort of the first interesting thing to note. And then, you know, at the end, as you heard, he doubles the offer, which is really the sort of it's a fixture on infomercials. Is that as you try and sell somebody on something, you add to the package. You're always trying to impress the viewer with a deal that just is so good it can't possibly be believed. And so we're not just going to give you this one set. We're going to give you two sets. Just pay, he said, processing. I think he said
processing
shipping
and handling. Yeah.
Right.
And you get it all. I mean, but we listen to these things and we kind of chuckle and we think, what a joke, what a farce. But at the same time, that they're working.
They work. Yes, it works very well. The processing and handling is interesting because it's actually a way for infomercial producers to make more money because it doesn't necessarily track to what the actual costs are of processing and handling or shipping and handling. So they may very well make their money back just on the shipping and handling alone. So when they give you an extra set, they're actually perhaps not giving you anything at all because you're going to end up spending an extra $20 or $30 having something sent to you that only cost them a couple of dollars to send. So it's very, very clever what they do, and I was really surprised by how sophisticated it all is.
We'll go in to the subtleties of how it gets done. Let's hear from listeners who have done it. Derek in Charlottesville, Virginia, you're on the air. What do you know of pitchmen and buying off infomercials, Derek?
Hi, Tom. I bought a product from Billy Mays called Fix It. It's a scratch remover from cars. And they really get you with the psychology. I went onto the website, and they ask for your credit card number first, and then they offer you different products that you're not interested in. And when you say no thanks, they say, oh, okay, we'll double it, or we'll, you know, do this or that. And I ended up buying a vacuum cleaner, and I paid way more than I initially wanted to. And they already had my credit card number. They already got me.
And they just kept selling and selling as long as you were on the telephone.
I went through 8 different offers on things that were not even related to what I wanted.
Yeah. And off you went with your fix-it and a vacuum cleaner. Remy, that's the kind of grab them by the collar and don't let them go until they buy something.
Right. And they have his address, so he'll be getting lots of mail for the rest of his life, I can assure him. Once they have your address, they send you material regularly forever and ever and ever. Yes, the art of the upsell, once you get somebody to agree or be interested in one product, you try and add in other products as well. So if somebody's buying a little blender, well, we'll sell them all these little accessories, these little cups, and we'll sell them, a recipe book, and we'll sell them. And so they'll try and sell you stuff as well as give you free stuff. And that's part of what goes on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the kings and queens and secrets of America's booming infomercial empire, the lords of the Vegematic, the Thighmaster, the Ginsu Knife, the 1-800-COME-AND-GET-IT pitch frenzy that Americans appear to love. Remy Stern is the author of the new book, But Wait, There's More. He looks at the people and psychology that moves all that stuff all day and all night on all those infomercials on television. You may hate it. Many do, but it sells a lot. Peter in Venice, Florida, you're on the air. What do you know, Peter?
Yes, hi, Tom. Hi. I may be a contrarian on this, but I found Billy May's style to be annoying and obnoxious.
Yeah.
I learned years ago that television was considered an intimate medium, and I'm wondering how it could be so successful, as you say, with all his screaming and ranting at us. I turned off the TV set and swore that I would never buy any product that he was pitching.
I know exactly what you mean. I can't say I spent many hours watching, but somebody does. Well, look at that, Peter. Let me get one more right here from Joyce in Boston. Joyce, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I hate to give anything positive here because when you talk about being a sucker, my heavens. I agree with everybody. I agree that they're irritating, especially with Billy Mays. His high-pitched voice was always an irritant. But I have to say that, yes, I have gone for a couple, like maybe 3 in the morning. Perhaps my judgment is poor, but I will go for something that they put out there. But when they start and again, I agree with your two previous callers, that they start trying to sell you absolutely everything and won't get off the phone. And I usually give up on those because I decide I don't really want it that badly. But in Billy May's case, the OxyClean, I have to say, it kept me from being totally closed and immediately shutting them off, all of them.
Because you bought it and it worked?
I didn't buy it through him because, again, I was sick skeptical and I didn't want to get caught up in all of that.
Yeah.
But it started appearing in the stores. And because what I saw him do, and because I have 2 sons who get things lots dirty,
right.
But a lot of these polo shirts have a white collar, but everything else is colored. and so if you try to clean the white collar, it doesn't clean normally.
Right, right. And they got you, Joyce. OxyClean in your house.
And the OxyClean, but it didn't get me. OxyClean, I'm going to sound like...
Oh, boy, commercial. It's a testimonial. Tapes are rolling now, no doubt.
Listen, you should try, but frankly, it's not just me. That now Fantastic contains OxyClean, Shout contains OxyClean.
Joyce, get a show. You'll sell millions of them. Here's Billy Mays himself talking about the weight of responsibility he said he felt when it came to pitching people's products and inventions.
There's a lot of people that believe that, and I, you know what? There's a lot of pressure put on me when people believe that I'm the only one who could take their product to the next level. And I take that pressure very seriously.
Billy Mays, feeling the pressure. Remy, we've got a caller who says, can't stand to listen to this stuff. Turn it straight off. It's obnoxious. And Joyce says, well, I don't know. It kind of got to her. She bought it. It's great.
Lots of people tell me they find they found Billy's voice really annoying, and it's actually no accident that he sounds that way. You know, he spent close to 20 years pitching in person and going from state fair to carnival, where he would set up his little demonstration, and he would actually have to shout to get people's mm-hmm. attention. And I think when he made the move to television, he never quite understood that he had a microphone and didn't have to. It was sort of part of his sales style at that point. So he continued to shout, and viewers everywhere paid as a result. But his style is very forceful. They're not always quite as forceful, but many of them are in your face. Strangely, some people actually like the fact that it's straightforward. The sales pitch on an infomercial isn't disguised. It's not some secret. You know, it is what it is. You know what he's selling you, and you know what he wants you to buy.
But who sits and watches that, Remy? I mean, I'm amazed these days when you look at the TV lineup sometimes, how many stations at all kinds of hours of the day. It's just one infomercial after another, which means someone's just leaving that on and actually watching it. Have you seen the numbers on that? Who watches it? Why?
Well, it's actually because stations make an enormous amount of money, billions of dollars a year, selling the airtime, which is why, of course, the television networks don't want to see this business go away and want people to continue buying blenders and choppers and whatnot. The money that is made from selling that airtime in many cases pays for the daytime programming, the real programming, the local news, for example. And that's a stream of revenue that they can't really live without because the rates are – I mean, it's very expensive to buy airtime. It may not look like expensive programming, but it's often styled to sort of be simple on purpose. They don't want it to be too slick. But they can spend a fortune buying that time, and the networks love it.
But there are times of day when it almost seems like we're herded into the infomercials because on broadcast channels, I've seen times when there's not much else on these days.
Yeah, it's sort of lined up in a strange way, lined up really nicely for the industry because the sort of overnight hours are the hours that the networks want to sell. And back in the early days, the direct marketers realized that nighttime was a great time to sell people things because your defenses are down. You're tired. You're feeling a little sleepy. You're not quite as alert. And then this pitch comes on, and somehow at 2 o'clock in the morning, they manage to convince you that you really need a beef jerky machine, and you find yourself running to the phone and ordering one. Probably not the sort of thing you would do at 9:30 in the morning, a steaming cup of coffee in front of you, feeling alert. At 2 o'clock in the morning, however, you're a sucker, and then you go to sleep and wake up in the morning and say, "What did I just do?
What did I just buy?" Let me get a call here from Hendersonville, Tennessee, and Lloyd. Hi, Lloyd. You're on the air. What'd you buy?
Hi, Tom. I bought a white smell detector, and I had friends who were trying to get me into metal detecting because I'm retired Navy and a history major.
Yes.
And they let me use theirs. The only thing would beep, and I wouldn't have no idea where to dig. And this info commercial came on. I said, if they ever came out with an info commercial that said how deep to dig and what you were looking for, I'd buy it. Well, their info commercial was put together so well, it showed had a little computer screen on it, mm-hmm. and it showed what you were digging, how deep to dig it, and it worked. And it was several hundred dollars. But I called, made the investment. They did not give me a big runaround and buy another product like so many do.
Right.
And I've totally enjoyed it over the years, and it's paid for itself. And so I said if they ever had something like that, I'd buy it. And on TV one day, it just went
and
on.
So you did. Now, Lloyd, I'm thinking, though, that this taps very well into dreams. Because when you get a metal detector, of course, the dream is you're going to discover some fantastic treasure underground. They've got a lot of leverage with your dream life there, don't they?
Yeah, there's always a goal. Like, I'm into mm-hmm. Civil War stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always looking for the belt buckle. You're always looking for the high-dollar thing. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, you're finding the quarter, the nickel. But you'll find an old one every now and then, and that'll keep you going.
So buy this, and treasures may come your way. Lloyd, thanks for that story. I mean, Remy, here it is. Buy it now. They tell him how. They put it together just right for Lloyd, and he gets to imagine all the things he'll pull out of the ground.
Yes, it's a twist on the get rich pitch that you see with foreclosed real estate on television. It's that you too can be very wealthy and find buried treasure and live happily for the rest of your life. They do play into those dreams or present very simple solutions to problems that you may or may not have known that you had. That's sort of typically how they're constructed. So there's a problem and here's the solution and you have to buy it to solve that problem. Or it is more sort of a fantasy. It taps into something. It's very sort of deep inside us about how we see ourselves and how others see us and whether it's an acne product. And there is the sense that, you know, you can't go out looking like that. You need to make a lot of money because you need to care for your children and be happy. The shows play into these very deep-seated emotions in ways that we often don't even sort of notice or appreciate.
And whatever they're selling is super valuable, but you're going to get it for a great bargain. You talked with sort of the original king of the infomercial, Ron Popeil. He's got his trademark kind of countdown at the end of his shows on the best price possible. And of course, he had the Ronco everything, egg scrambler, automatic pasta maker, rotisserie. Here he is with his Ronco grill pitch.
For all the work it does, this machine should sell for over $400. You know you're not going to spend $400 for it, not $375 or $350, not $325 or even $300, not $275 or $250, not $225 or even $200 like you all may be thinking, not $190 or even $180. All you spend for this fabulous machine, an over $400 value, all you spend is just four easy monthly payments of $39.95.
Can you imagine? What a bargain. Remy Stern is with us. His new book is But Wait, There's More. Takes us inside the world of infomercials. Ron Popeil, right at the top of that, he talked with him. Joining us right now from Los Angeles is Noah Goldstein. He's professor of human resources and organizational behavior at UCLA's Anderson School of Management, author of Yes, 50 Scientifically Proven Ways to Be Persuasive, a former telemarketer himself. Noah Goldstein, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
This is huge business. You've looked at the psychology of it and thought a lot about it. What is it that gets these guys, whether they're persuasive somehow or obnoxious somehow, that gets them into our wallets and gets the credit cards headed toward them?
Well, here's the thing, Tom. In an ideal world, our brains would be large enough so that we could thoughtfully consider every single piece of information that's relevant to the issue at hand. Unfortunately, you know, that's just not the case. We have very limited cognitive resources. So in order to use those resources wisely, we tend to use mental shortcuts that help us decide how to act. And it turns out that these mental shortcuts typically help us make good decisions most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But experienced persuaders, especially infomercial producers, tend to use these mental shortcuts against us. To just give you one example, take the universal principle of scarcity, okay, which basically says that as opportunities become less available, they're going to be perceived as more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, typically, that's a mental shortcut that is very effective. It leads us to make good decisions. You know, if you're in a supermarket and you're wondering whether or not you should buy a bag of oranges, and there's only one bag of oranges left, that's going to tell you, well, that's more valuable now because if I decide to put off that decision until later, that bag of oranges may be gone and it won't be around anymore. So normally the rule is really adaptive. The thing is, though, infomercial producers tend to sort of hijack these shortcuts and use them against us in all sorts of different ways. And scarcity is just one example of how they do it, as you guys were talking about before. You always see these things with 3 minutes remaining, eight items left. If you call right now, you'll get the special deal. Well, I can guarantee you, Tom, if you call later, you're going to get the same deal.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Remy Stern, as you looked into how it's done, they must be very, very conscious of this. The call now line, if the line is busy, call back, as though the line's busy because everybody else is trying to pounce on the precious item.
Yes. It is. Everything is constructed. There's nothing left to chance, and everything has been tested time and time again. We just heard Ron Popeil's famous countdown, and He started at a totally arbitrary, excessively high
$400.
And then counts down from there. So, of course, when you're looking at the product, he's now sort of set the bar. I mean, he could have started at $10,000 if he had wanted to, although that probably would have been even less believable. And then at the very end, he did what all infomercials do, is he broke the payments up into several smaller payments, which is, again, another psychological trick, which is that if I tell you something is $100 or I tell you it's four payments of $24.99, it's essentially the same price. Although when they've done research on people, they've found that people don't perceive it as the same price. If they look at two products, they will always think that the one that's broken into smaller payments is cheaper. And so they always price it as such. So you'll never see a product for $149.
But that's another example of playing on those sort of mental shortcuts that we do all the time.
Exactly.
Let me get a call from Salt Lake City, Utah. And Anais, you're on the air, Anais.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what do you know?
I was, this was about 5 months ago. I was planning my wedding and kind of slightly unable to sleep all the time. And I was 1 o'clock in the morning and I saw a product. That would, my mom had been struggling with frozen shoulder on both shoulders for years.
Is that kind of arthritis or something, frozen shoulder?
Yeah, it would be for light therapy, for alternate, I don't remember what it was, but I pulled out my wallet, grabbed my cell phone, I was like, yes, this is going to help her, this is going to be great. And then I thought about it, pulled out my laptop, and figured I would look at reviews just before I called. And the reviews were just terrible about their customer service, and it was just, I mean, the machine tended to break within days and didn't really help that much. And
so you took 2 seconds to Google them or something before you used the cell phone and thought better of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was about to spend $100+ plus shipping and handling for a product that I was probably going to break and I was not going to get my money back for.
It's an interesting issue, Remy. I mean, in the internet age, it's easy to sort of tap in the name of whatever product and see what people actually say about it. It's not just one way from the TV anymore. Listeners can. Is that hurting the infomercial business?
It has in some cases. The negative reviews have become a problem, and producers have done what they can to avoid them. You'd be surprised how few people actually do go online and research things before they buy them. Many of them are set up to be impulse buys. They want you to decide to buy something right there on the spot and call. So they're not really sort of allowing for much time to go online and research. So that sort of prevents people from actually finding out these products don't work. I mean, it's advisable to take some time and maybe wait till the next day and look into the product and see if you really need it or want it. I mean, there are some decent products that are available on television, and there are a lot of not great products, and then there are outright frauds, and there is no way to sort of tell the difference. People report being very happy with things. People tell me horror stories. I've heard for the book, I heard just terribly sad stories about people who had been completely, essentially robbed. And you just don't know. There's no way to tell except by doing a little research.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the kings and queens and secrets of America's booming infomercial empire. They've been a joke for a long time. They also sell, but they have been laughed about. All the way back in 1976, Dan Aykroyd made the popular infomercial parody, The Bass-O-Matic, for Saturday Night Live.
How many times has this happened to you? You have a bass. You're trying to find an exciting new way to prepare it for dinner. You could scale the bass, remove the bass's tail, head, and bones, and serve the fish as you would any other fish dinner. But why bother now that you can use Robco's amazing new kitchen tool, the Super Bass-O-Matic 76? Yes, fish eaters, the days of troublesome scaling, cutting, and gutting are over. Because Super Bass-O-Matic 76 is the tool that lets you use the whole bass with no fish waste without scaling, cutting, or gutting. Here's how it works. Catch a bass, remove the hook, and drop the the bass. That's the whole bass into the Super Bass-O-Matic 76.
Let you use the whole bass. And the funny thing is, it's not that far off the real pitches. Remy Stern is with us. His new book is But Wait, There's More. He's looked deep into the infomercial world. Noah Goldstein is with us from UCLA's Anderson School of Management, has thought and written a lot about the psychology behind what makes us buy. Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Matthew. Matthew, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is regarding the live testimonial of a satisfied customer. How much merit do people actually put into that? And is it what they say it is, or is it a professional actor that actually comes in and reads off a script?
Yeah, good question, Remy. What's the answer?
Well, it depends. There have been cases, sure, where there are actors involved. In many cases, they're not actors; they're regular people, although they've received something to participate. It's not always a cash handout, but it may be a weekend vacation to come and stay somewhere nice and record testimonials and sit in the studio audience, or it could just be the product that they're getting for free to take part. So, you know, there aren't that many people who are running out to do testimonials for products. It is a challenge at times to find people, and so they have to do things to sort of sweeten it to get people to participate. Then, you know, there have been really egregious cases where, you know, brothers and sisters have been giving testimonials, and you know, there are some really, you know, huge frauds that have also been perpetrated on television. And so in one case, there's a guy sitting in prison whose testimonials were all his family members, which obviously didn't fly with the Federal Trade Commission, was not so thrilled about that.
No, Noah Goldstein, but yet, you know, we know when we're watching these that we have no idea if the testimonials are for real or not. They could be made up. They might have some element of truth in them. And yet it's that form of somebody endorsing it that seems to work, and that's played on in many ways.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, this is just another example of a case in which they take another mental shortcut, and we call that the principle of social proof, and use it against us. I mean, again, if you think about these things as sort of adaptive mental shortcuts that help us, you know, live our lives in an effective way, you think, well, if you're not sure of, you know, what decision to make or how to behave, you look to similar others to, you know, to know what is would be an effective decision. And what they're doing is they're playing on the principle of social proof by often, you know, not only including testimonials, but also they have audience members who look extremely excited to be learning about some new crazy contraption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that they often do is they don't just stock the audience, or they don't just stock the testimonials with beautiful looking people. Sometimes, you know, it's good to have beautiful looking people, but what you'll notice is that there's typically a pretty diverse set of testimonials and a diverse set of audiences. And that's so that somewhere within that audience, you're going to see somebody who looks like you. And to the extent that you can relate to that person, you're going to be more convinced.
And so that's another kind of shortcut. But I'm wondering, a shortcut to what here? Sometimes you look at this and you think, how many hours? 300,000, what is it, a month, Remy, I think you're saying, of these infomercials played in North America. And you wonder, are we a nation of imbeciles? Because we know a lot of this stuff is purest hokum, and yet somebody's watching. A lot of people are buying, Noah.
Yeah, this is a great point. But it goes back to something that you and Remy were talking about earlier, which is that, you know, these things tend to come on very late at night. And, you know, if you think about what I was talking about earlier, we have very limited mental resources to begin with. But at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, we're very tired, and so those mental shortcuts tend to loom larger in our decision making. And the thing is, I mean, it is a testament to how powerful these mental shortcuts are. Now, you know, if you think about when you're watching TV and you're watching a sitcom that has a laugh track, well, it turns out, and there have been studies done on this, even if you're aware that the laugh track is a fake laugh track and not a real audience, you're more likely to find the jokes funnier with a laugh track than without. And I think that just, you know, that just shows how fundamental this mental shortcut is.
Remy Stern, the Dallas Morning News, loved your book, but they look at this whole industry, and the reviewer here sort of made him sick. He said these stand metaphorically, the infomercials, for the American way of life over the past three or four decades, and they don't mean that in a good way. It's kind of like blind consumerism. When you sit down with someone like Ron Popeil, who has made tons of money in this business, I mean, how does he look at it? Does he see himself preying on human weakness or encouraging sort of the most base instincts in humanity or something else?
The people who sort of populate this industry are not the most philosophical lot, to be sure. So,
But he made the salad shooter. How could he not be a philosopher or whatever?
He doesn't see it in that way. He lives in a giant mansion in Beverly Hills.
A very young model, a Victoria's Secret model or something for a wife.
Yes, a Fredericks of Hollywood model. She's his fourth wife, and she's 35 years younger than he is. And he lives there on his property. He has a giant garage that is his workshop where he buys every kitchen device that comes out and puts it in there and tests it and sort of takes it apart to see how it works and is always sort of thinking up new products. So when I spent a day with him at his house, he didn't get very deep, but he did show me his secret turkey fryer that he's been working on for years, okay, which has not seen the light of day yet. You know that,
right? Philosophy. He's got a turkey fryer to work on,
and he wanted to sell me on the idea of a turkey fryer. Even though I explained to him, well, I really don't cook that much, and he explained to me why I would really need a turkey fryer and why I didn't realize that I needed it. So. They don't often get into what it is that they're doing or what sort of impact their work has had. There's certainly a dark side to it, and there's also a very humorous side. I mean, we heard that great clip before, and I think there's something really sort of wonderful and fun about the sort of pop culture effect of this whole industry. It's really sort of provided hours and hours of material for Saturday Night Live alone. So
let's you use the whole bass. Let's go to Dave in Buffalo, New York. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The fellow that sells the ShamWow towels has got to be the funniest guy on television right now. He's selling a butterfly chopper, and he takes his competition apart and throws the thing right over his shoulder, and it lands right in the kitchen sink. I think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
A butterfly chopper. Now, what is that, to chop meat or to chop butterflies?
It's a slap chop, and it's a little tiny manual food processor for cutting up vegetables and such, making small salads. But when he's selling the ShamWow towel, which is like a man-made chamois, he reminds us, the Germans make great stuff. Like, oh really? I didn't know that. He's so matter of fact about it.
and ShamWows fly out the door, a super absorbent towel. Let's go to Simon in Potsdam, New York. Simon, you're on the air.
Hi. I love infomercials. I think they're the most entertaining thing on television.
Why?
Hello?
Why, Simon? What's so funny?
Oh, just the great things that they claim, like the fabric glue one where they glue the flag back together and then he stands in a wind tunnel, withstands up the gale force winds, and then they fix a parachute and jump out of air. I think they're entertaining. I will buy my family all gifts if they'll send me the commercial with it.
Okay, here we go. Gale force winds and the flag hangs together. Carolyn in Portsmouth, Virginia. Carolyn, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
About 5 or 6 years ago, I was up at midnight because my husband was out of town, and I was watching one of these infomercials, and they were selling these scooters, and they showed them in San Francisco, and all you did was lean into them. You leaned, and you went fast, and you lost weight. And it went, wow, isn't that perfect? So I ordered not one, but two.
Okay.
And I saved this for his Christmas present, and I had it stored secretly, and I brought it home and unpacked it and got on it and almost fell off and broke my leg. And he just said, no, absolutely not. And I sent them back, and I did get my money back, except for shipping, but that is the last time I'm going to do that.
Fell off the scooter and no thank you. So we've got a buyer who was disappointed, but also, Remy Stern, people who are really entertained by these.
There's a sort of, I guess, a big difference between watching these and laughing at them and then actually thinking that the product's going to change your life. I mean, I think one of my favorites from the late 80s was the guy who set a Rolls Royce on fire. I don't know if it's sort of a famous one where he was showing off a car polish, and he literally takes out lighter fluid and sets a Rolls Royce on fire to show just how strong this car polish is. And, you know, it makes for great television, these sort of crazy demonstrations and these people who are completely – who look like they're completely out of their minds. And so we can sort of appreciate it for the entertainment value, and then it's sort of a separate thing whether you buy the product and expect it to change your life or help you lose weight. And you know, often if it's too good to be true, it usually is. And weight loss, for example, I mean, there a few years ago there was a product called Exercise in a Bottle, which was marketed on television, which was it's just a pill that was supposed to mimic exercise, which just on the face of it should really not have convinced anybody to buy it. And yet they did buy it. And you cannot mimic, of course, exercise with a little pill that you take daily.
No question. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Noel Goldstein, I think some people look at these infomercials and it's like a sign of the end times. I mean, they think, oh, this is the ultimate, you know, what's happened to the United States of America and our culture when we sit around watching and buying this stuff? I mean, do you see it that way as a symptom too much couch potato time, too much money, too little critical thought? Or is it just what's always been with us, you know, since the days of snake tonic and who knows what in the caveman days?
I think it's a good question. The fact is that, you know, every single day, every single year, we just become busier people. The fact is that these types of persuasive techniques have been around since the dawn of time. But the difference is that we're just busier. We're just busier, more fatigued people than we may have been 30 years ago, that we're working it, you know, late into the night, whether it's on homework or some sort of, work assignment. And so, you know, because we're getting these persuasive messages, while we're so exhausted, we're more likely to fall prey to them.
Well, here's the magic bullet. Come on. A handheld blender pitched in a kitchen as two friends, a pitch man and woman, prepare breakfast for a group of friends. Are we tired enough to buy this? And incredulously, one of them asks how they do it.
Hang on a second. You just blended a bunch of smoothies, you whipped up an omelet, you ground coffee, and you mixed up two different types of muffin batter in that thing. What the heck is it?
It's the magic bullet.
The personal, versatile countertop magician.
Countertop magician?
That's right, because it works like magic. All you do is choose your blade.
It comes with two.
Twist it on, put the bullet in the power base, and press. As long as you're holding it down, it stays on. When you want it to stop, let go.
Or press and twist, and it stays on for a hands-free operation. When you want to turn it off, simply twist it back.
The magic bullet. Noel Goldstein, I couldn't help notice reading Remy's book and also listening to things like this. I mean, there's something about magic here. These are products that promise almost a solution to everything. Maybe there's a, we're in effect trying to find, I don't know, the meaning of life, the answer to all the problems in one 1995 purchase, Noah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a couple different terms for it, but one term for it used in psychology is called phantom fixation, where you're promised something that's going to make your life so much better, and despite all of the evidence contrary to that, you just can't help but think, wow, it's worth taking a chance on this for the amazing benefit. It's just hard to ignore.
Naomi in Bristol, Vermont, you're on the air, Naomi.
Tom.
Yes.
One thing that got me on these infomercials, and I did watch them on kind of off hours. I used to work late and finish early in the morning. But there was these kitchen gadgets, you know?
Yes.
And they'd offer them. I was looking at this pair of tongs. And, of course, it wasn't me. I got to give credit to my partner here. He is the voice of reason. And they would advertise these and say, this is the only thing you'll ever need. This is the only pair of tongs you'll ever need. Okay. What if you call right away? We'll send you two.
though if you just get one pair, it's all you'll ever need. I love it, Naomi. Remy, what do you take away in the end? Is this about human fallibility? Is it a sucker-born every-minute story? Is it exploitation?
In some cases, it's exploitation. There are you know, very desperate people. I mean, it's interesting right now, given everything that's going on, you'll see that the money-making infomercials have actually been revised to account for the recession. So, you know, in those cases, it's particularly upsetting to see them sort of taking advantage of desperate people who you know, may have lost their homes or aren't working, and they're presenting them this opportunity to get rich. So in some cases, it's quite sad to see the sort of effect it's had. And in other cases, I think it's just harmless entertainment. I mean, many people don't buy a product and watch them and just sort of laugh at them. But it does say something of sort of about our what sort of consumerists we are and how we love to just watch a good sell. Just as we go window shopping and look at things and don't buy them, we watch infomercials.
Just watch, and the sale goes on and on at an incredible level and scale. Noah Goldstein at UCLA's Anderson School of Management, author of Yes, 50 Scientifically Proven Ways to Be Persuasive. Noah, thanks for joining us this hour.
Thanks, Tom.
And Remy Stern, author of But Wait, There's More. Remy, thanks for bringing us the story behind all those crazy ads. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I don't know what to say about infomercials. I won't be watching that many, but a lot of people will. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.